Hey, you.
Yeah, you, man. Let me ask you something. You like making great money, right? All right. Well, here's a really cool opportunity that I just had to share with you. Driving with Uber. Yeah, Uber. That's right. That popular smartphone app that connects riders with drivers. Heard of it? I know you have. You probably Ubering right now while you listen to the About Last Night podcast. Let me tell you something. I love Uber. I Uber all the time. I take it when I'm trying not to drink and drive. I take it when I'm trying to not waste gas. I take it when I'm just trying to make some new friends. You know why? Because Uber drivers, man, most of them got really interesting stories for why they even started getting involved with Uber in the first place. Let me tell you why Uber drivers love their job. They love being their own boss. They love earning great money. They love how you just need a license and a car to start. That's it, man. Driving with Uber is great for anyone who needs flexibility in their life. Parents, you know why you love Uber? Because it's a really easy way to work around your family's schedule. Students, you know why you love Uber? Because you can make some extra cash in between those classes. Now, the prime time to cash in driving with Uber is right now. Okay, you're going to thank me for telling you how to get paid every week. You got a car, you got a license, boom, put them both to work for you and start earning serious life-changing money today by signing up to Drive with Uber. Visit drivewithuber.com, that's drivewithuber.com, drivewithuber.com.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. What's the name of that website one more time?
I'll tell you, Tony Danza, it's drivewithuber.com. And now enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you so much for subscribing to the show on iTunes, for telling your friends and your family and listening to wherever you listen to the podcast, man, whether it's in your car, at the gym, while you're just standing outside of your ex's window, hoping they come out and take you back. However you listen, we appreciate it. We appreciate all the tweets and the emails. You guys have really been stepping it up lately with the reviews, too. If you haven't done it, take 2 seconds right now before the episode. Go to iTunes, rate it 5 stars, give a little comment on the iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts. So many great episodes coming up. Really pumped. Obviously, I'm shooting a movie and doing this TBS game show with my friend Eliza Schlesinger right now, and meeting some cool people that have agreed to do the podcast, which I'm super pumped about. Brad Williams, of course, is doing the same. Right now, he's in Montreal, Canada, for the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival on some killer shows out there. If you want to see Brad and you're in the Canada area near Montreal, go see him. He's doing one of the shows with Neil Patrick Harris, which I've told him, don't come back unless you get Doogie confirmed on the podcast, motherfucker. So hopefully that happens. But again, thank you for listening, and keep going to aboutlastnightpodcast.com to get past episodes. Keep going to astoymerchandise.com to get all your ALN merch, Ronnie and the Quave shirts, Titanic shirts, the straight up ALN shirts, mugs. We got hats coming soon. Astoymerchandise.com, ESTOYmerchandise.com. You guys have been bringing that shit to the shows and we love it. We'll keep signing them for you. Brad signs a bunch of tits always, male or female. He don't discriminate. We appreciate the support that way. Today's episode is, man, it's we've had some of these episodes where they've been both hilarious and inspiring, and this might be the top of those, man. This our comedian friend, first-time podcast guest, is the one and only Eric Myers. If you don't know who Eric Myers is, I fucking guarantee you're going to very soon. The guy came to L.A., not more than a year ago, and has kind of taken the scene by storm. He's one of the sweetest dudes you'll meet, a very genuine, humble dude, been doing comedy 10-plus years, and is just strong. Very few people want to follow him. He opens for Brad because, you know, Brad does his thing and likes to have his show be strong all around, and Eric just brings it. His energy is unlike anybody. His delivery is unlike anybody. The voice that he speaks with, that, you know, is a little different than his normal speaking voice. He's got a little bit of a character on stage. Still him, but, you know, it's a heightened version, and it's fucking hilarious. It's unique. And hearing where that came from is really going to kind of blow your mind. His whole story, really, where he started comedy in Maryland, to doing a year of college in Florida, to moving to L.A. and really dealing with some sobriety issues, living in bushes for a fucking week, and then showing up to the Comedy Store fucked up, getting turned away, and then a year later getting his name written on the wall because he just became a paid regular. It's a fucking banana story. He's a quick dude. He's a funny dude. He's a great dude, and he's destined for stardom. And he's on a great track right now where he's got his shit together, and he couldn't have been a more fun podcast guest. I feel fortunate to call him a buddy, and I know you're going to love this episode and want to see him live after this. Follow Eric on Twitter at Eric Myers Comedy, E-R-I-K-M-Y-E-R-S Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Like I said, Brad's in Montreal right now. I'm in Boston and then Atlanta doing these projects, but we'll be back in L.A. soon. August 11th through the 15th, I'll be in New York City for my buddy Brent Morin's one-hour Netflix special at the Gramercy Theater. I think tickets are still available. So August 14th, Gramercy Theater, New York City. Come see Brent Morin and I. I'll be doing shows all around New York, posting that on Twitter and Facebook. Back in L.A. on the 16th. I'll be doing shows around L.A. from the 16th until the 30th of August, and then August 31st through September 6th, I'm in Las Vegas at the Tropicana, baby, Vegas, the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana. Come see me there live. Get your tickets at laughfactory.com. Brad Williams will be in Ventura, California, July 31st through August 2nd at the Ventura Harbor Comedy Club. Go see Brad in Ventura, and when you're driving out to these shows, listen to the podcast on your phone, on your radio, on your Bluetooth, on your fucking Android, however you do it. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Thanks for supporting. We got all the merch, the tour date, the Twitter info out of the way. So, ladies and gentlemen, sit back, relax, and enjoy a very special, brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the hilarious Eric Myers.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to a dope podcast. Dinner or breakfast, Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
I apologize.
Wait, you just, yeah, that's right. When you told me you got, because we were texting you today on the phone, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, like,
are we all ran out?
15 minutes later. 15 minutes later, you texted me.
I can't hear out of my earphones.
That's because you didn't turn the button on.
I didn't turn the button on.
Oh, God. You did just get a computer a day ago.
I didn't. Dude, when I got sober, I bought a phone from Walgreens on Sunset and Vine.
Quick little shout out to Walgreens.
And
yeah, right.
The phone was $20, and you could buy like 30 minutes was like $20, and 300 minutes.
Okay.
And 300 minutes goes in like two phone calls, because I'd call my dad and he'd be like, "Well, your mother for breakfast." I'm like, "Dad, I'm paying for this fucking." Let's can we cuss on here?
Yeah.
I'm like, "Dad, your mom's breakfast just ate up half my." That was my phone call
was
for
it
the
a good
month.
Breakfast was it worthy of a?
It was, you know, it was like cereal and milk.
Standard breakfast. All right.
The older people get, the more they just have to tell you what they ate. Like they go to a restaurant, it's like an epic saga. Aunt Marie had the clam chowder.
As if like you've never heard of these foods before.
I'm like, I know what shrimp scampi is. This was 20 minutes of conversation.
My aunt is pushing 80, and she loves to tell me about new creams and pills she finds. As if I'm also 80
the next stage.
And need these recommendations.
Have you heard of this thing called Preparation H?
Yeah. I mean, but like, that's like small fries. To, like, she's like, you know when you've got this pain in your elbow and it goes all the way down to the left side of your butt cheek where your hip and your butt connect? I'm like,
no.
No. And she's like, well, I found a cream that makes your elbow feel better than your butt. I'm like, is that even something I need to be concerned about?
Like I'm in my 30s. I don't have to do this yet.
I guess.
I feel like, you know how young people are competitive? I feel like old people are competitive, but like with their ailments. Because my parents live in a 55 and over community, and it's like they try to trump each other or whoever's the worst ailment. Like, my back hurts. My back and my feet hurt. You fucking pussy. My back, my feet, my ears.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm going to die probably tomorrow.
I'm dead right now. Yeah. My everything hurts.
My everything hurts. That's how you win. That's the fucking draw four in Uno. My everything hurts.
My everything hurts. It's like it's how old people get attention and sympathy.
Yeah, because they get the more problems they have, the more the assisted living or whatever the nurses are coming in, and the more attention you're getting. So the more they're making.
Well, right, because their kids aren't visiting them anymore. So they
it just got real. Take it down a notch.
My nana was in an assisted living, and her medicine cabinet looked like Johnny Depp's suitcase in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. She had every fucking pill. I mean,
visual.
Xanax of like 10 milligrams. I used to, look, I'm a recovering addict. And I used to take a 0.5 Xanax and be flat on my ass. And I'm like, Nana, you're taking like 5 milligrams Xanax. She's like, those things? Yeah, I take them before. I've been taking them for 50 years.
I eat them like Skittles. Candy? Like,
she ate them like Skittles, dude. Like, I would talk. Nana would be having a great conversation that she would pop. Like, she would take this little cocktail of pills and look over, and Nana's just like staring at the wall, like fucking smiling, drooling. And I'm like, Nana? She's like, who the fuck are you?
You invited me, bitch.
I'm smoking these pills, motherfucker. I'm like, holy
what?
Shit.
Damn, she's a pro.
Nana was gangst. Actually, the villages in Florida, this 55 and over retirement community, has the highest syphilis outbreak. Because they can't get pregnant. They're not on their period. I mean, right. I mean, and they're just fucking.
So they're just fucking.
And 55 is not that old. I mean, no. I'm sorry. That's 20 years.
Look, my grandparents, before they both passed away, I
fucked a lot.
What? Well, I've heard stories, right?
They didn't not.
Many stories.
They did.
I'm just kidding. I'm gonna throw it
off. You read their blogs, Prunes and Pussy? So they didn't.
I subscribed to their website.
Good for you. Well, you were one of seven people.
I had six accounts. That,
they would. I heard them once. Like, they were in their 70s. But also, let me tell you this. I was bummed out, obviously, because I will never not hear that noise. And on a sick level, it makes me go, oh, I miss Grandma and Grandpa.
Yeah.
Because I'm listening to their fuck sounds in my head. But also, I was like, that's crazy that they are. Because also at that age, too, when I think it was like, you know, I was 24, 25. I didn't know. In my head at that point, I was like, oh, you reach like 70 and you just don't want to do it anymore.
Right.
So the fact that was my introduction to, oh, you still can? Like,
still can.
Physically,
still
even. You know?
Man, so like for them, the lyrics to my neck, my back is a whole different thing. It's like, that hurts.
How dare you?
That hurts.
How dare you?
What hurts? My neck. My back. My pussy and my feet. What? Damn, that I'm tearing it up.
No. It all doesn't function.
My hip. My back. Ow. My hip. My hip.
Ow.
No, seriously, my hip. My hip and my back.
My hip and my back.
They both hurt.
My hip and my back.
Yeah.
Are you singing? What was that lady's name? Was that her only song?
I don't know.
What was her name?
Little Kim?
Little? No, it was
little something.
It was little pussy. I don't know.
Little pussy.
Jesus
little
pussy. Might as well be though. With the amount of artists like in the songs that get popular and what their names actually are.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Jay-Z. We only think that's a cool name because we like his music.
Right.
Sure.
That's my whole thing about bands. Like, you can name it something. If your music's good, it doesn't matter. If U2 was called Me 3, nobody would give two shits. If the Beatles were the Beaners, you would have been like, well, that's kind of racist, guys, but your music's incredible.
Yeah, but,
right.
Yeah, but you can, I'm the Walrus. It's an incredible song.
Yeah,
so
that's what I'm saying. You can name yourself.
Well, sure.
Like, what would you name yourself if you were a... Well, I would want you to be a rapper. If I had to pick what Brad did musically, I would want... So what would your rapper name
God.
Be?
Too short.
It's Taken,
it's
son
taken.
Of a bitch.
I had to.
I would have to be Ankle Punch.
Nice. Can I be honest? I'd buy two of your CDs.
Yo, man, this is MC Ankle Punch.
Yeah.
Coming at you from Fullerton, California.
Hey.
That's right. OC, motherfucker.
Yeah.
We have to deal with traffic on the 57 freeway. You don't know what... Thug Life is?
AP. You'd have hats that said AP on them.
AP.
Little Brad.
What would you be, Eric?
Me?
Yeah.
I'd be White Chocolate. Yogurt covered raisin.
Yogurt covered raisin. I can
yogurt covered raisin.
Oh, that would be your single.
Froyo.
Froyo
in this bitch. Toppin'. I don't even know what I mean.
No, that's all it is.
Toppins.
You've what toppins I want? I ain't a bit. Captain Crunch.
Dude, and every concert,
Crunch,
you throw
bitch.
A different topping on the audience.
I do. That's my hit song. I eat toppins with gluten because I don't give a fruitin'. Fuck.
Oh.
I eat toppins with gluten because I don't like fruitin'. My yo, fro, yo. So fro, yo, this dick. I put fro, yo on that neck. My back. My dick and my crack. Where's Tyler Wood?
Sign me up.
Oh sign me
take
up.
Take all my money.
Froyo this dick would be your catchphrase on the sitcom
dick.
Spinoff for that rap
career. For toppings, why don't you have this
Froyo dick? Froyo this dick is your get her done. You know what I'm saying?
I'd be MC Pinkberry. They should have like a hipster vegan rapper, just like the biggest pussy. I live in like Los Feliz, and I just like drive
Los
a Prius.
Yeah.
I try to act poor, but I can afford a MacBook Pro. It's like $3,000.
Oh,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say we definitely live in the city of that. I saw a guy with a monocle.
What?
Who invented the monocle? Why don't you have both glasses?
Were you at some sort of Monopoly dress-up party?
Was it Mr. Peanut?
I wish I was there.
Mr. Peanut?
Yeah, nice. That would be the only time that would ever make sense. That's the only time you're ever allowed to wear, if you're looking like Mr. Peanut.
If you're about to try to take over the world.
You have to be an evil villain, a criminal genius.
Well, I mean, he lived in Silver Lake, so maybe.
Possibly.
But
he was looking to buy every book at the bookstore.
I was just going out to lunch, and this guy in his 30s, it's like, do you have glaucoma in one eye? No. You don't have, no. He's got a monocle.
Do you generally get upset when you see that stuff?
Yes, I do.
Where do you get a monocle?
Well, I don't even know where, okay.
And he's the first one. Now every asshole at every coffee shop is going to have a monocle.
If he's one of the cooler hipsters, he'll set the trend for sure.
I think if you ever order a monocle from a store, zip ties. They just call in the cops. They arrest you at that very moment because you're doing some other shady shit. I just don't like everyone else trying, I'm just wearing a monocle because I'm trying to be different. It's like, I was born a midget. I am different. I couldn't help it.
Right.
I didn't pick this. I'm not trying to be a hipster thing. Yeah. It's like, I was 5'8", but I wanted to get chicks. So I started this whole midget trend.
Yeah.
Brett's an ironic midget. He does it.
You're doing it to be cool.
Yeah, Dinklage copied me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I don't get hipsters because they grow ironic mustaches, which I don't know if they know what irony means, but the whole thing about hipsters is you're trying not to be cool by conforming to what is cool.
Right.
Like you're like, oh, this mustache, it's I'm growing it because it's not cool, because Burt Reynolds had one. But I'm like, it is cool now.
There's too many layers.
There's
too many layers. Yeah. Just have a mustache or don't have a mustache.
But you go to Urban Outfitters, everything's throwback. Oh, we have all this technology. But I'm like, well, what are you going to have, powdered wigs and slaves and horse-drawn carriages?
Okay. Hey, our guest has been Eric Myers. Thanks so much for coming by.
I'm not advocating slavery. I'm just saying.
Powdered donuts
it's
and
the
slaves.
Cool new thing.
What did you say? Powdered what?
Powdered wigs. Powdered wigs. Powdered donuts.
By the way, powdered donuts and slaves.
Bring me my Little Debbie snacks.
No. Coming up, the next hottest single from fucking Froyo.
Powdered wigs and slaves. Django Unchained. Bring me my hair piece and my...
I thought it was powdered donuts and slaves.
They're not a hipster. Powdered donuts.
That's why it was funny.
Powdered wigs and slaves.
You're right.
The ultimate throwback jersey.
I would love to...
That would be an insane thing if the NBA had throwback night, and for throwback night, just none of the black players could play.
Nice. That's so funny.
Throwback.
How far back are they going?
Well, I mean, like the 1950s and 60s. They're like, it's throwback night. It's like, no, we don't want throwback night.
We don't want throwback night.
That means we're not here.
Yeah, exactly.
Where's your girlfriend? She's at home in a miserable, loveless marriage. She can't leave because she doesn't have any money. Our bank account, fuck her.
What was life in Florida like, Eric?
It was a...
You grew up in what part of Florida?
Have you ever had someone shit on your face?
Oh, God.
Well, I mean, I don't like to talk about it.
Well, Brad,
Yeah.
I've
read your tweets.
This one time in Germany.
It was the first time he paid for it.
Oh, sure.
Now, Eric, what part of Florida did you grow up in?
I did not grow up in Florida. I'm from Columbia, Maryland.
That's right.
And
Maryland.
I moved to Florida about 8 years ago. And then I moved to LA about 2.5 years ago.
But I lived
in Orlando. I lived in Orlando for the bulk of the time. I lived in Tampa for a brief period. I was couch surfing.
So growing up in Maryland, that was from what age to what age?
I was 7 till about 27.
Okay, so prime years to find the funny bug.
Prime years, yeah.
Do you remember the moment that you, was it what something you saw or something you did and you witnessed a response that was like, oh shit,
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I always wanted to be a comic. And about 1986, I was 6 years old. My parents were across the street playing poker with our neighbors, the Nevs, and HBO was on. And I walked downstairs, and Bill Hicks was on HBO. And I sat down on the couch, and he had a black cowboy hat, dressed in all black.
I remember that special.
Right.
He came out with flames behind him.
Yes, he did.
Oh, that was the best.
And I sat there, and I said, what is this? And it was like magic to me. And to this day, it still is. And I went to the school the next day, and I was around the lunch table, and I did all his jokes.
By the way, so you absorbed everything in your first attempt at just watching it.
I don't know about everything, but several jokes you probably butchered
every bit, but you...
A six-year-old doing Bill Hicks.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Bill Hicks isn't simple comedy.
I, I was probably 10. Maybe it was later.
Like,
yeah, probably. You know what? I don't think I was 6. I was probably a little bit older.
So, what were the kids at the lunch? I mean, what were they?
They were in hilarious. No, they were in hysterics.
Let's be honest. Very few kids know what stand-up is. So, if you're
well, I remember the bit, and it wasn't anything you had to think about. But Bill Hicks had a bit about how sexualized commercials were. So he's like, I have an idea for a commercial, and it basically was like, pull out, and you see a naked woman, spread eagle, you know, fingers in her cooch, and she just goes Snickers, and he goes, God damn, I want a Snickers. And that was what I said to the kids. I'm like, hey, they should do these. I didn't give Bill Hicks credit. I act like I made it up.
Of course.
I said, man, you know what? You know what they should have for a commercial? Just a naked chick, finger in a coochie, Snickers. I'd buy that Snickers. And all the kids are like, he said coochie. Hey, Snickers. And so they loved
it. That's amazing.
And then in second grade, before or after this, I had a pound puppy. And we had show and tell, and I went up with the pound puppy, and I did its
voice. Bill Hicks Snicker Coochie bit?
I didn't do the Bill Hicks bit. I was just doing bits with the pound puppy, and everybody's laughing and clapping. And then afterwards, this girl, Jessica Ennis, went up, and she tried to make jokes, and some kid goes, bring Eric back.
Whoa!
So fuck you, Jessica Ennis. In your trailer park,
getting heckled in the
you couldn't follow
grade.
Me then. You can't follow me now.
Even then, no one could follow me.
So that was like your first taste of a curtain call.
That was my first taste of a curtain call, and
that's awesome.
I was always funny, but I was always weird. But I always wanted to be a comedian.
Yeah.
Ever since I was a kid.
What? Why? I mean, just
because it's the fucking. It was everything. I saw Sam Kinison. I saw those guys, and everything I wasn't. In real life, was that on that stage? It was like, sexy. It was powerful. Yeah, you're in like, control.
It's like becoming a superhero.
Making people laugh, being on that crowd and making people laugh was just. It was like this is magic.
And you so would make cool. your so you once you got that going with the kids at school, it was. At what point do you transition from doing other people's bits to starting to find? I mean, obviously it takes a while to find your voice. So as a kid. But you still have, like, what's funny to you as a kid. So, like, when do you start going, like, was it, like, for me, it was, like, impressions of other kids and teachers that, like, made kids laugh. So, like, when would you go away from Bill Hicks stuff and start doing some Eric Myers original shit?
I did Eric Myers original shit. We were at the lunch table, and they had the trash can, and they had the milk cartons. And they said, here's where you throw the milk cartons. They had the chocolate milk, the blue low-fat, 2% milk, and the red. And I'm like, why the fuck do they need to show us? What, oh, we don't know what chocolate milk looks like. Oh, is it the brown carton? The brown one's chocolate? And the kids are laughing.
You're doing chocolate milk bits?
And
That's so funny, though, because no kid... Like,
no kid did them. And I'd make fun of our teachers. I would make fun of the school. I had routines. Even then, I didn't know what routines are, but I had certain things to make people laugh. Like, we had a certain teacher that had pit stains, and I was like, and I would make fun of him, and I would make fun
of the
chocolate.
By the way, that's ballsy. Because every kid... secretly and silently makes fun of the teachers.
Oh, absolutely.
But not ever, and rarely at school, usually at recess because you're so far away from the classroom.
Right.
So to do it to their face, dude, you're a god.
I didn't do it to the teacher's face.
Okay.
Oh,
I did
shit.
It to the kids at the lunch table.
All right, well,
but I would talk about how bad I would always have crushes on girls and I wouldn't have the courage to talk to them or I would just ask them out. It was like always horrible shit happened to me with girls and I would tell my dorky friends and they thought it was hilarious and it made me feel better. It gave me a sense of power that I'm making fun of how bad. So all this bad stuff was happening to me, and I would make jokes about it. But all my friends were funny.
I mean, geez, yeah.
Do you remember everybody was funny in school? You know, like Picasso said, he's like, every child's an artist. The trick is staying an artist when you grow up.
Right.
But like in school, everything was hilarious. Everything was a fucking bit.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah, because you're experiencing everything for the first time.
Right,
so,
right.
Like you were saying earlier, doing the Bill Hicks stuff, it's like he said coochie. Holy shit. Like,
right.
It's just like the funniest thing you've ever heard
still
in your
funny,
life.
Still funny, by
the way. Right.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Like there was one kid in my kindergarten class where every day at some point... during the day, he would just run up in front of the class and go, pee-pee, and then just run back and sit down.
God damn it. I wanted not to laugh at that because I go, all right, man, you're past that. But the way, the act out that Brad just did.
Pee-pee! There's nothing funnier than penises, and there never will be anything funny.
Oh, dude, I laughed
it's
at that sex
the
talk.
They're
so,
always funny.
Yeah,
yes.
Penis so, jokes, and we'll...
So, like, and we laughed every day, and he would, like, plan it out, like, okay, this could be my moment, like, to, like,
he was strategic
today,
with his pee-pee delivery.
Yeah. Oh, and like, one time he did it during a fire drill. He was innovative.
Yikes. Yeah. So, by the way, that's to cut through that amount of chaos.
Sure.
Because, like, there's teachers, it's pandemonium. Like, they need to keep all the classes in line, and this kid's just like, yeah, well, speaking of keeping things in line.
Yeah. And
pee-pee.
And And I still laugh. And I remember the teacher like punished him so many times, and then like that was the first time I knew about dealing with censorship, because like the entire class was like rising up like, no, freedom of speech, like he can do whatever.
Yeah.
And
right.
So like the pee-pee joke never died, which might be the name of my first book.
There's a
memoirs.
One of my best friends was a vice principal of an elementary school for 3 years, right? And yeah. he would tell me all these great stories all the time. And assembly, right? Where every kid in the school is K through six, and this having a big, I think it was like a concert, like and the orchestra and the band, and some kid who was known for being kind of a jokester, stood up, took his dick out, and went, and if you can't see what I'm doing, obviously, he just basically flailed his body around and flopped his
little helicopter
dick around as much as it could flop.
All right, well, maybe it's not the helicopter if it's 9-year-old.
You're being very generous with that description.
He was black.
Yeah, yeah. And so he was. And so so then I go, I immediately start laughing. I go, Carissa, that's like so funny. And he's laughing, telling me this.
Yeah.
And he goes, I go, has this kid done it before? He goes, oh, man, yes. He goes, apparently he would do it in like bathrooms. Like he would walk in while kids are peeing or washing their hands, take it out and go, and everyone would laugh. And I go, okay, well, he just needed a bigger audience. This kid's a fucking natural performer. He was doing open mics, and he saw an opportunity to take the stage at Carnegie Hall and fucking said, my dick is not staying in my pants. So now, then my buddy has to reprimand the kid. He goes, I go, what'd you do? He goes, obviously he hated to get in trouble. He goes, yeah, man, obviously. He goes, as funny as it was, he goes, all the teachers laughed. He goes, because we're fucking human beings, dude.
Right. Teachers laughed.
A kid taking a dick out is not planned, all right? There's never any discussion like, what happens when Robbie takes his cock out? No, man, it just happened.
We have a three. We have a system.
All right, after they do Beethoven second, Robbie's going to pull his fucking tiny helicopter penis out.
Robbie, you pull your cock out. We go right into Beethoven's third.
Then we do finger painting.
We do.
So then he sits the dad. The dad comes in. He has to bring the dad in the next day and go and tell him. And he said the dad comes in and goes, so what happened? Why is he in trouble? He's like, my buddy's like trying to, by the way, fight through laughter, describing like,
sure.
Because he goes, hey man, well,
you gotta be an adult.
Yeah. He goes, it was the assembly, and we're sitting there waiting for the concert to begin. And let's say again, his name is Robbie, and he goes, Robbie stood up. And took his penis, and then he told me too that he was trying to decide what label to give a child genital. Like he goes, should I say,
you want to say his junk?
Yeah, yeah. You want to say this 9-year-old took his fucking cock out? No, he's like,
he took his cock out.
You don't say that to a parent.
He took his pee pee.
Yeah,
pee pee.
He might have said pee pee.
That's what we need, the pee pee.
No, and he said wiener. I think he said wiener, and that makes sense. But that just. But then he also told me, he goes, I didn't want to say wiener because it was gonna make me laugh harder. And I was like, yeah, that's why we're friends. So then he goes. He goes, he took out his wiener, and he goes, and he went, and he flailed it around. And the dad goes, what do you mean? So then my buddy goes, I had to go, what I just did is like a dick flail.
What do you mean? What exactly did he do with his
Which,
dick
by the out? Way, yes.
Well, I mean, because everyone knows that take your wiener out is slang for write good cursive.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
What do you mean?
So then he goes, he flailed it around.
Can you be more specific?
Yeah, yeah. In which direction, north or south? So then he flailed it around.
It was southeast.
And then he goes, and he just went, ugh, and then sat back down. And then the dad goes, did anybody get hurt? And my buddy goes, I mean.
Several students are now blind.
I mean, emotionally scarred, right?
Yeah.
So then my buddy was like, well, no, but like, you can't do that. And the dad was like, I don't know what the problem is. If nobody got hurt, that's hilarious.
The dad said that?
Yeah.
Well, now we know why Robbie's pulling his penis out. His dad is encouraging it.
Yeah, sure. Probably, right?
I mean,
my dad would have killed me.
I mean, I get that as a parent, you're always like defending your kid or whatever, but did he honestly think that, like, well, I mean, if he wants to take his dick out,
let me ask you guys, as comedians, what would, if you found out your son did that and got a lot? Because my buddy also, my first question as a comic, I go, did he crush? Like, did the bit crush? Did he get laughs?
He
goes,
bomb?
Dude, there was obviously only sections of people could see it. He goes, but the like surrounding area like lost their shit. Obviously, he was like, a lot of kids were also like, what the fuck? But
sure,
he goes, a lot of people like were dying laughing. Even like young girls were just like so like. This is so crazy. They were laughing,
Right, right.
It's
right.
Funny.
Yeah.
But I think, obviously, as a parent, you just have to. Because that's like, if you encourage that, then it's like, they for sure.
I don't know. Like, I guess as a dad, but then also as a comic, I'd have to be like, okay.
Yeah, well, you laugh with your buddies and the fellow dads.
It's like, all right,
good, open with that.
Good intention, but
yeah, I understand that you saw the opportunity for a big laugh.
Yeah,
but also, guess what? And here's what's great about comedy: you can keep your dick in your pants and still get big laughs if you want to.
Yeah, I mean that's debatable.
Yeah. Depends on if they're taking the Brad Williams comedy class or not.
I mean, that's
how much you pay for a shit. And so,
but at what age does that stop being cute and funny and become like? I think little Robbie is a child molester. You know what
I think once you get into double digits.
If I pulled my dick out now, I was like, ah! Like, Eric?
Yeah, that would be the end of the podcast.
Funny?
And I would move just to get away from the idea of your dick being out of my apartment.
Burn this table.
Well, you don't appreciate art.
Now, wait. Now, would you...
If you pulled your dick out and no one laughed, that had to really be...
Art is the name of his penis, actually.
Yeah,
Arthur. I call it Art for short.
What would your... You said your dad would lose your mind. So when
my
you
dad
were
would have
up,
fucking lost his
your
shit.
Your folks, how supportive were they in your comedic endeavors?
Like my dad
when
told
you start,
me...
Yeah.
Sorry. My dad...
they probably also had to throw you... Like the Bill Hicks, when you saw it, and then you probably asked him about it, yeah? Mm-hmm. I mean...
No, I didn't ask him about it. My dad was always really, really funny, and he always really liked comedy, and my sister was always funny, and my dad was like really animated and shit, so like... I always wanted to be a comedian.
Yeah.
And I told my dad I wanted to be a comedian. He's like, you got to go to college. And I was like, I don't want to go to college. I want to be a comedian. I never tried. I never gave a fuck because I knew I'd be a comedian. Wow. And I just always knew I was going to be a comedian. I was obsessed with comedy.
Jesus.
Obsessed with comedy. Okay. And this was before the internet, so I would read about Andy Kaufman and like the Who's Who, or I'd go to the library and get like books by Steve Allen, where I had all the comics at the time and read about them. And just
this is at what age?
My whole life. I love comedy.
Crazy.
I always love comedy. And so I always knew it. And then, so I told my dad when I was like 18, I was like, I want to be a comedian. I don't want to go to college. He's like, well, no one's going to book you unless you have a college degree. I'm like, Dad, you think I'm a complete fucking idiot?
Yeah.
Have you seen the guys on TV? None of these people have college degrees. And so I went to school for a year and dropped out. And I was like, I want to be a comedian. So in 1998, my dad was working at this place. And one of his friends was a comedian named Jeff Barrett. We went and saw him at Bonkers in Florida, and Daniel Tosh actually opened for him and did like 10 minutes. It's like 1998, and he was hilarious. And I remember walking around that night listening to my headphones, just like going over the bit in my head, all the jokes. And but after that, I went up. So when I was 18, I was still living in Maryland, and I was working in a movie theater with my friend at 10, and I had this Judy Carter stand-up comedy, The Book, and I was showing my friend at 10. He was really funny. We were always making fun of everybody at the movie theater.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, we should do an open mic night. And he's like, no way. And I'm like, come on. So I started telling all of everybody at the theater, like, me and a 10 are going to do an open mic night. And in the back of the Judy Carter book, they had a glossary, and I called all these clubs in Maryland. The book was kind of old, and they were, we closed. This one, Winchester's Pub on 102 Water Street in Baltimore. I was like, dude, Thursday night, open mic night. He's like, we got to be 21 to get in. I'm like, don't worry about it. Me and all our little friends from the movie theater went. And they weren't going to let us in, but there was, like, nobody in there, and we had, like, 8 friends. And they're like, fuck it, come on. And we did a two-man act where we had one mic, and I would say the setup, and he would do the punch.
Yeah.
And we went up, and we fucking – we didn't destroy, but we did good.
Okay.
And everyone at the movie theater – that was the first time people looked at me differently in life, and I could notice a difference. Like, people always made fun of me. I was always kind of a goof.
For real? Yeah, I was going to ask
all the time, yeah. I was just a goofy-ass person. I was an eccentric person.
So they made fun of you because of – also, kids are just cruel and they find the easiest things to tease about. But what was? But you feel like you got up more than normal, or what?
No, I just feel like everybody gets made fun of growing up, and I just feel like I liked getting made fun of or taught. I liked the attention.
You found a thing early. This was like now it was like okay, cool. Like you can keep teasing the other kids, but like you can't tease me anymore because now I got this.
I didn't mind the but it's the first time like everybody thought I was a loser, and I never really. But that time when I did the comedy, they looked at me different.
Right.
Like they gave me respect, and I was like, oh okay, because I did something that I realized people were scared to do. And they respected me.
Mm-hmm. Fuck.
Because everybody, they were always these like alpha male man's men, but they were like, I wasn't going to beat them physically or getting girls or whatever, but I did something they didn't have the balls to do. And that made them respect
me. And that's why comedy is the fucking coolest thing ever.
That's why the comedy is the coolest thing ever. And so everybody talked about this thing. For the rest of the... Even my boss, who always hated me and made fun of me, he looked at me differently that night. I was like, there's something to this.
Your boss at where?
At the movie theater.
Yeah.
My boss at the movie theater. So when I was 20, I tried out for Comic View at this place called Jokes on Us in Laurel, Maryland. And I went up.
BET?
BET.
Because you look at Eric Myers, you think, that's BET material.
I'll tell you who's going to love this guy.
Yeah.
Slaves and Powdered Donuts. Yeah.
Well, I walked in and...
Sorry.
The Slayers of Patterson.
I just love that pairing of things.
That one really got me. I'm sorry.
Powdered wigs.
Powdered wigs. I'm sorry.
Powdered donuts. I walk in. The crowd is, I'm the only, the crowd's all African-American. Yeah. And I walk in.
Shocking.
Shocking. And I went up and I did, I remember I did, the crowd fucking loved me so much.
Mm-hmm.
And they were
nervous. Were you nervous?
Nervous is not the word. I almost transcended my body. I was so scared.
Because you'd how many performances, quote unquote?
Second. I'd done the one with
Holy
a 10.
Shit.
I'd done the one with a 10 when I was 18. Now I'm 20. I didn't go on stage again.
By yourself now?
By myself.
You didn't have a setup punch guy with you?
Right.
No. And it was my friend Corey and Raina. I'm working at Pizza Hut now, 2 years later. My friend Corey and Raina.
You're up in the world.
And like all the, and it was, you know, primarily a black audience. And the crowd loved me so much. And I was like, I looked at that crowd and I was like, these were people I had nothing in common with.
Yeah.
And they loved me. And I was like, that's the power of comedy. It's just, we're human beings.
Right. Because before,
it was beautiful.
It was at least kind of, like you said, your coworkers from.
Yeah.
From the movie theater, so they'll obviously give you the benefit of the doubt. And it's right. Like, that's our guy, we know him. But these people, you walk out, they're assuming they're seeing a professional comedian, someone who has done this a million times before, and you're walking out, that's your second time ever doing it?
Yes.
That's insane!
Yes. And I didn't get on BET, but I got to open for Jimmy Walker.
Yes.
Well, sure.
So I got to do it.
Dynamite.
I got to do it a month later, and I remember I did primarily, like, Black Rooms in Baltimore. That's where I started, and I watched Def Comedy Jam, and I love Chris Tucker, and that's kind of why I talk with that voice, because I would do that voice.
Oh, shit.
The crowds were so rowdy in Baltimore that I would go, hey, what's up? And they would watch, and they would start laughing because I had that silly voice.
So, I was going to ask when that kind of came into your act.
Right off the bat.
Okay.
Because I love Chris Tucker. I had the best of Def Comedy Jam VHS, and I would watch him.
And you emulate, when you're starting out and you don't have your own style and point of view yet, you emulate who you like.
I love Smokey and Friday. So I would do Smokey. Mm-hmm. And my nickname in college was Smokey because when my roommate first met me, he walked in the orientation day and I was smoking a joint in our room. And I was so fucking
stoked. Please take me back there real quick and just give me that interaction. He didn't smoke pot?
He
at
did
all?
Smoke pot.
Okay. Oh, okay.
My first day at Towson University, my parents dropped me off and it was orientation day. And I was walking around with these shorts and I'm walking around and I'm baked. And the weed had, I had a hole in my shorts and the weed fell out. So I'm walking around campus and they're taking all these kids on a tour and I go, fuck my weed. And I'm running around and I see my bag of weed and there's a tour of people coming up and I run and I step on the weed and they walk by me and I'm just standing on the weed and I'm like, welcome to Towson, home of higher learning. And they walk by me and I grab the weed. Nobody saw it. And then I went in my room and at the time I was struggling with like really bad depression. I didn't want to be in college. So I didn't, people are like, you're so crazy. I'm like, I didn't give a fuck about getting thrown or caught. I just didn't care. So I was just smoking weed in the room and I couldn't find any alcohol. So I bought Robitussin, which is like 99% alcohol and makes
you
trip.
Holy shit.
And I drank like a bunch of Robitussin.
It really is 99% alcohol.
No, but it's a lot of alcohol.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And it makes you hallucinate if you drink a lot of it.
Sure.
So it's called Robitussin.
It's like liquid NyQuil.
Right. Yeah. NyQuil's got so much, and mouthwash you can drink.
What would you, do you it's remember some MacGyver of getting high? And not to give you a fucking cough drop flashback, but like what, when you would drink the Robitussin, what type of shit would you hallucinate?
I didn't drink enough to super hallucinate because I was kind of scared. I drank maybe like double the dose, but it made you like super tired and kind of drunk.
But then you smoked pot.
And I smoked pot. And I was laying in the bed and my roommates, we had suite mates. So we had a two-door room and then a bathroom that connected another two to the room. Yeah. All football players. So my football player, Jim and Chad, I remember they were drinking and listening to the Grease soundtrack. And they walked over to the room.
Wait,
and it's like,
football players were listening to the Grease soundtrack?
I swear to God, this was inauguration night.
Fuck yeah, they were.
And this Adam, is the toughest motherfuckers on the planet.
Yeah, my roommate Adam hadn't moved in yet, so they walked
over.
Tell me more.
Whoa.
I love Grease. So they're, you know, I think they were listening to the Grease 2 soundtrack, which was really fucking weird.
Oh, how dare they?
Jesus, yeah. Like, we're going to ball. You can't get the Grease 1 soundtrack.
Does anybody know any of the songs from Grease 2?
I could do two of them. Cool Rider and Bowling Funky whatever.
Bowling Funky Junk? What is it?
Bowling Funky Junk.
I think they're playing Coachella next year. Bowling Funky Junk.
So I'm in bed tripping and they walk over like, hey, we're Corey and Jim. We're football and we're listening to Grease. You want to come over? And I was like, huh? And they were like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? I was sleeping. And then the next day I rolled a joint and I'm smoking and my roommate Adam comes in. The whole room smells like weed. And he's like, He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, smoking a joint. He's like, I'm going to call you Smokey. And he smoked weed, too. He ended up selling weed. And my name is Smokey.
And then you would start doing that voice.
I did the
voice. So an immediate reaction. You started doing it on stage, and people were just, like, responding to it.
They loved it.
ASAP.
It got their attention, and they were already laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really have jokes at the time. Well, I had one joke.
It's your second time on stage.
I had one joke about my dad catching me jerking off. That was my only joke.
Which is a classic.
Which is a classic.
Was it a true story? Did you? How much of it did you embellish?
You know, I was like, I live at home with my parents, and they always know when you're jerking off because they always knock on the bathroom door. Eric, I've gone to Wendy's. Dad, leave me alone. I'm busy. Now it's to the point I can't jerk off at the sound of my dad's voice. Eric, I'm going to Wendy's. What are you going to get, Dad? The Big Bacon Classic. What are you going to get on it? They're going to slather the lettuce with mayonnaise. Say it slower. They're going to slather the lettuce. This was my opening joke. This is my only joke. Whoa, and I would jerk off the microphone.
Yeah.
And it was so filthy.
Yeah, but it's...
And it would either die or get a laugh.
I mean, how could that ever not go well?
That's well, that was my good joke, and I'd open with it. Yeah. Then I had two other jokes that weren't good. And they're like, Eric, you got to do your good joke last. And I was like, what do you mean? My other joke was about the retarded stripper. I went to the strip club. The joke was retarded. I gave him $1. Bitch gave me back 4 quarters. My mom caught me jerking off. Well, she didn't catch me. I jumped down from behind the couch. Happy Mother's Day, bitch! These were my jokes when I started comedy. Jesus Christ.
But like that bit with the dad and the Wendy, that's so fucking good.
I wouldn't go that far, but it was
like that's a great bit, and that's your second time on stage.
Well, also you're committing super hard, and
but I had been writing for years,
right,
and I had like I would tell my friends my bits. I would slip into conversation without telling them. You ever do that?
Oh yeah,
and they're like, oh man, that's funny, and I'm like, oh, they're like, you should do that as a bit. I'm like, oh really?
Like
I haven't never thought about that before.
Because when you tell someone it's a bit, they don't laugh. They're like,
right.
Oh yeah, it's I like
because they don't want to be practiced on.
Yeah, you can't say like, hey man, is this funny?
No,
never.
It's never funny.
Never do that.
You have to just slip it in.
It's like the guy who's like, look, man, I'm not racist, but, you know, and then it's like, well,
and they always say something racist.
Yeah.
I had a buddy do that once where he was like,
but I hate people that don't look like me. And you're like, that's not good.
Well, oh, Jesus, man.
That's very close-minded of you. Are you a child?
Can you sign yourself off this lease?
Yeah. I had a buddy once, a grown man and you think like that? That's fucking sad.
I had a buddy once tell me a story. He goes, you know, people that would insert like the race of somebody that because they thought that was an imperative detail for the story,
yes.
But had nothing to do with it?
Nothing.
Absolutely. So you're like, oh, you're like a passive racist.
Right.
Where he would go like, he'd go like, oh man, dude, okay, Eric, dude, crazy story. So fucking Matt and I are at the park last week, right? And there's this giant group of pigeons, right? And Matt sees the pigeons and he runs up on the pigeons. Matt's black, by the way. And he runs up on the pigeons and the pigeons fucking flip out and fly away. It was classic.
Well, I mean.
So then two things, yeah.
I think that's an important detail to the story because now you know that he was running at the pigeons very quickly.
For sure. But like, also then
because like, you know, because if it's a white guy, it's like, oh god, that probably took forever.
Sure. Nice. But I'm not laughing.
I'm not racist. But can we edit this part out?
No. But as a listener,
I'm just gonna play this clip when I become famous. We found in 2015, Eric Baez.
What did you think about the racist pigeons, Eric?
Well, you know the black man running at the pigeon, and I'm like. Yeah, they're like, hey, these fucking pieces of shit.
So the voice now. Was there ever a point where somebody, once you start getting booked on more and more shows, right? So after the Comic View thing, that got you a little more attention, yeah. And then you were able to some more confidence. You start going to clubs, and
I never had any confidence. Every night I was like, Jesus Christ, what am I doing?
But did anybody?
You still like.
I still don't have any confidence.
You still don't have confidence, and you're one of the best comics I've seen.
Yeah, when you got out of here, I remember the first 2 days of you being here. 2 days, man. And just already people being like, dude, you heard this guy Eric Myers? Like 2 days, man, of just crush city.
It's never enough, dude. I'm a perfectionist. It's never,
of course,
it's never hard enough.
I've seen
it's
you.
It's never hard enough.
I love it when you open for me because I mean,
you're the only person who lets me open for them.
Really?
And I'm not saying this to be egotistical. I'm saying that's reality.
Well, because I know you're not an egotistical guy, but
you're the only comic who. Let's be open for that.
Well, I mean, you've gotten standing ovations before I go on stage.
Yeah, but you can follow me, no problem.
Well,
some people, not that they're not, but some people are. I'm very high energy.
Yes, you are.
And some people
don't want
that they're not hilarious comics, but it's just a different energy.
Sure,
yeah, and I can't understand that if your energy doesn't match that, then it's like, but also,
I don't know. You're
the head. Like people are coming.
People are just coming in general, but yeah.
People are coming.
Yeah.
I get it, though, dude, because your act is a fucking entertaining show, and it's like nobody, your show is so good, nothing's going
to
throw it off.
Brad also wants his whole show to be good, which
damn
I think,
right.
Like, so it's like you want, you know, why would you want somebody before you that's going to, A, bring the energy down and not set you up, or B, just not have people, because comedy is subjective. So people, regardless of what you do, are going to walk out going, oh, I liked, and, you know, obviously audience members think that it is a competition where they're like, you know, we've all had it where they come out and go, this, you and the second guy were the best. And you're like, it doesn't fucking, we're not,
why
there's
is
no ribbons here.
Yeah, it's not. We're just trying to.
That's so such that's an American funny. Thing is everything.
Of course.
You were the best.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, we're not playing basketball.
No.
This is an art form.
There's no trophy.
There's no best.
There's no
but
trophy.
So that's going to happen regardless. So it's like, why wouldn't you want them to walk out also, which is more often than not, I think, where people just go out, oh, man, what a great night. You know, and they just, you know, that guy and that guy. And
love to create that. It's like that's why I have Adam. That's why I have you open for me. Eric, that's why I have you open for me. Because I want the audience to walk out going, what the fuck did we just see?
But you're a rational person. I mean, you're a rational, down-to-earth person. And in this town, people
that.
Are... What?
We could probably argue that, but yeah, sure.
Yeah, but some people let their ego destroy their lot. Ego is the death of comedy.
Sure.
You know, more people have been taken down by their ego than anything else.
Yeah. Have people ever tried to tell you with that voice when you started putting it on, where did people be, hey, man, like, don't, like, be you. Like, that's not how you talk, so why would you...
all the time.
And you never took it into consideration?
No.
Good for you, man.
And it wasn't like that. It's just that it wasn't like I did it to be stubborn or to prove a point or I thought I was right and they were wrong. I listen to what they say. People tell me that to this day, and I try to tone it down, but it's like that's just what comes out when I get up there.
Yeah.
I can't just talk normal.
And that's how...
But just be you, but I'm like, that is me.
That's how you are. That's,
you know?
That's normal Eric on stage.
It's like that. This is fucking just how... I mean, I don't do it as much of a character as I was when I was younger. It was such a character. Now I kind of do it in the beginning and take it down a notch. But that's just how it comes
out. But we're all a heightened version of ourselves on because you're performing. So that's just where...
Right. It's a but the
you
thing,
channel it that way,
right? The thing about comedy to me is it's a performance. It's it's an entertainment. I think people, I see some people that just forget that.
Yeah,
right.
You know, they just want it like
you can have great jokes, but hey, man, are you selling them? Are you emotionally connected to them? Do you people also?
Right.
Yeah, the entertainment factor. I mean, and that's why you know you can when people are like, oh, fucking, you know, Carrot Top is like not a funny comic. It's like. Okay, well, like, I maybe because of the prop stuff, you're not even putting him in the comic boat, but, like, he's animated and he's expressive and
he sells out every night and he gets standing ovations. Like, I don't get it. Like, and so for someone to say to you, hey, man, don't do that voice because that's not right. It's like, yeah, but then you look at the audience.
That also comes from a place of jealousy and envy,
absolutely.
Too, where they're like,
but
oh,
I don't want to be like everybody else.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
Here's the thing. I mean, we've all done the road for a number of years and it's like, look, I'm an artist. I respect comedy as an art form, but it's also like comedy's a weird thing. It's like if the audience isn't laughing, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't also go up there and just pander to the audience.
Sure.
I think people don't like Carrot Top or Larry the Cable Guy or certain comedy because they think they're just pandering.
Or Froyo.
MC Froyo. Because they think they're pandering to the lowest common denominator. Yeah. But I'm like, if you're on the road, are you going to go up and bomb and be like, I'm such an artist? Or are you going to go up and give them what they want? You have to find a happy medium.
Yeah.
You give them what you want, but they also like it.
Did the audience have a good time? Yes. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you have to go up there and do the slip on a banana peel and just play with your dick the whole time.
Wait, I mean, do you do that? Because I do that.
That's my closer.
Shit.
I pull my dick out and go, ah!
Hey,
and my dad's like, did anybody get hurt?
Yeah, what if
was anyone hurt up in this motherfucker?
What if the dad was like, was there a banana peel?
Was there a banana peel?
Well, then he didn't commit to the whole bit.
Were people laughing when he pulled his pee-pee out? I found it very entertaining.
That's four callbacks in once. Well done.
When did you... okay, so then you came out to L.A. and, like, let's talk about that just transition.
I didn't tell you about my first... Can I tell you this one story?
Yeah.
Yeah, fire away.
My third time on stage, I did the University of Maryland, and there was 300 students there.
The Terrapins. Yeah.
And the prize was $500, and I go up. I'm the second contestant. The first contestant is this 8-year-old child genius who goes to college. He's like Doogie Howser.
What?
He goes up, does 5 minutes, destroys. He's 8 years old, PG. I go up, do the mom jerk-off joke.
Right out the gate. This kid closes with like, and 4 + 5 = I don't want to do my homework. Good night, everybody. And you're like, I'm jerking up behind my mom's couch.
Well, no, he had closed with, this is his closer.
Okay.
I asked my teacher, would you ever yell at me for something I didn't do? The teacher's like, of course not. He's like, good, because I didn't do my homework. Crowd's laughing. I go up and be like, I asked my teacher, would you ever yell at me for something I didn't do? I was like, bitch, I didn't do my homework because I was jacking off. I was jacking off.
That's what you did?
Boo! They covered the kid's ears and escorted him out. All my friends from Pizza Hut were there. This girl Megan I was in love with, who literally never talked to me. And she came up to me in tears afterwards and goes, it was good. Some of my friends haven't seen me since that day.
Go back to Pizza Hut after that?
I had to. That was my job. And everyone's like, Eric, man, you have such balls. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, they loved you. The Pizza Hut gang, which, by the way, I'm talking about bands, by the way, with cool names. Yeah. If YouTube was called the Pizza Hut gang,
I mean,
they'd still be killing it.
Absolutely. So you go back to Pizza Hut, and they're like, fuck yeah, dude, that was awesome. Like,
no, do you remember when I said that the people at the movie theater looked at me with respect?
Yeah.
The exact opposite of the Pizza Hut people. They looked at me like I was...
Fuck you, Pizza Hut.
But if you were chasing a dream...
I mean, Domino's from here on out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if I was chasing a dream, say I'm your cousin, yeah. I'm Cousin Eric, I'm like, hey, Adam, I'm going to move out to Nashville to become a country star. And you're like, oh, okay, do you have a song? And I'm like, I just can't sing. And I'm like, we're going to get in the... And you're like, Jesus Christ. That's how they looked at me, like, Eric's delusional.
Oh, God. Cause
he's never going
to
make it.
Because you would express the dream to the rest of the Hut crew.
Everyone knew I wanted to be a comic.
And then they're literally watching the dream essentially die. Right in front of her, or so they think.
Oh, it died.
Eric,
it was buried, and
Eric,
we had the fucking
Eric,
funeral.
Why don't you take deliveries tonight, and just go ahead and... this next delivery is in fucking Des Moines, Iowa, and just go ahead and drop that pizza off and look for an apartment.
Yeah, land's cheap there.
But look, we've all bombed, but it's almost like... Comedy's not about bombing. It's about, I'm going to get up tomorrow.
Right. So I was going to say, you bombed
so hard.
It's freeing.
There's something freeing. It's so embarrassing, and it's so defeating that it's almost like, well, fuck it, I faced it.
Yeah.
It's like I faced the fear.
Yeah. And then it's never that bad. And then you get to do it again.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, so I'll just try again tomorrow.
That drive home is never good. You're like, fucking Brea. They don't know what comedy is. No, it doesn't matter. Whoever's in the crowd, whatever city, you're like, these fucking Cincinnati. They're a bunch of pieces of shit. It doesn't matter where you are. Those people are assholes.
Wait, before we go back to you coming to LA, any great Pizza Hut stories, man? And give us some because I've heard we've all heard
that's when Adam Ray's inner fat child spoke up and went, well, I have something to say.
Any great Pizza Hut stories?
Oh my God.
I did lick my lips when I asked that question.
Eric, any great stories about the stuffed crust?
What do they put in the dipping sauce?
Talk slower.
I develop a fat kid.
Fairy tears. We don't have there's no great Pizza Hut stories. Well, Pizza Hut story. What great story? One time a guy calls, and he's like, I want breast sticks. Long story short, I ended up fucking him in the ass, okay? There are no great Pizza Hut stories. So now I am getting chased by the mafia with a fucking 8-piece wings under my arms. Hey. And I'm like, I need this story. I'm either going to die or make this story. There are no great pizza stories. I delivered pizza.
But I mean, so you didn't like run into any crazy people that like...
No, only in porn movies you knock on the door with the pizza and they're like, I don't have any money, but do you want to titty fuck me?
I've
and
got
I'm like,
this
yes.
Snickers coochie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so like when you bomb in that situation, then how do you like, do you then immediately bounce back? Do you say, fuck, I'm never doing this again? Do you?
I went up the next week and I did good.
Awesome.
And I was like, I never minded bombing because I was like, I'll do whatever it takes to be the best comedian in the world.
I love that.
And I'm still like that.
I love, because sometimes, and that's what I think really determines if people continue to be a comic in this business is how they react the very first time they bomb.
It's a crossroads. Yeah. You get it and you either go, all right, well, that sucked. I don't want to feel like that again. So to prevent that, I'm going to stop doing it. Or I'm going to just make sure that happens by putting in years more work afterwards.
Right.
But that was never even a question for you. You were like, at what point do you realize like how long it's going to take to get really good? Or are you just like, oh, cool, like I didn't do well that time, so now I'll just keep going up and eventually get better? But it also sounds like you were having some good nights and some bad nights.
You know what, man? It's almost like I don't want to become perfect, and you're never going to become perfect.
You never.
You know what? My grandfather told me before he died, he was like really old, and I'm like, he's like, Eric, life's not about getting stuff. It's about having something to do. And I think that's what comedy, you can get the nice iPhone and the car and the beautiful wife in the house, and it's like, but it's, you need something to do. You need that carrot to chase after. That's what life is. That's the fun.
Dude, 1,000%.
You get something, and the next day it's old, and you're going to want, you're getting, wanting stuff never stops.
Right.
Greed never stops. Mm-hmm. It doesn't stop. So it's that getting, that thing, but I want to be, I want people falling out of their fucking seats.
They do.
They already
man.
Do. But you want it on like a giant. You want it on
better.
Like,
I always. It's never.
You
good
want
enough
it on an arena level.
It's never good
you?
Enough. I want the perfect act, the perfect jokes, the perfect performance.
I mean, God,
it's the only thing that's real. Comedy's the only actual art form where you don't have a director, you don't have a studio, you don't. You're the writer. You're the star. You're the choreographer. You're the. You're you. It's you. Mm-hmm. You can do whatever you want up there.
And
that's what it, that's that is what an art form is. There's no third party, like, well, hey, I wrote the script. Well, hey, we need to add Vin Diesel and the top 40 hits to sell, and then the movie becomes a piece of shit.
Well, and also, it's the only sort of art form, at least that I can think of, where there's just that immediate feedback. You immediately know, like, if you do a painting, it takes you however long to do the painting, and then you put it up, and then it's like, then you have to have people come and stand in front of it for 30 minutes to go on that, and then, you know, whatever. But like comedy, you say the joke, and right then you know, was that good? Was that bad?
You know.
Yeah.
You know when a joke does not work.
Did that? Yeah. Did that work or not?
Yeah.
And that's the part that I love about it.
So, I want to talk about a story, and this ties in, and however much you want to talk about your sobriety in that part of your life, we can get into. But there's one story in particular that Mark Saratella, friend of the podcast, told me about, in which you went to the Comedy Underground in Seattle. And this can maybe segue into it. And I don't know exactly the details of the story, but A, you hate flying, right?
Hate it.
So you took
I'm scared of it.
You took a 36-hour train ride to Seattle from Los Angeles.
I did.
Which, hey, can I tell you this? It's actually a very nice ride.
It was beautiful, yeah.
But it's fucking also 36 hours.
Sure.
Versus a 2.5-hour plane ride.
With no, I had no phone at the time.
Oh, shit.
I had a
no
magazine.
Tetris possibilities.
I had a magazine.
You had to stare out the window or make conversation with people or stand up and wave your dick around and hope people thought that was funny and would want to talk to you.
I talked to some 17-year-old girl who's reading like a knockoff Twilight. I know everything about this book series. She's like, and the main guy, Ethan, is a werebear. And I'm like, I'm so bored on my tongue.
How many hours left?
Yeah.
Werebears? That's one of the dark characters of Berenstain Bears. I did not know about
the werebear.
She was the only person up at 3 in the morning. So I was like, I was talking to like Chelsea about this book series. It's like a teen goth fiction.
Jesus.
Okay.
Every year they'll pump out a new creature with weird teeth that girls want to sleep with.
Girl, it's always like the bad boy, but he has a dark secret that he's a werewolf or a vampire.
I'm a werewolf. Psych, I'm a bat. Psych, I'm a fucking kangaroo.
Yeah.
Psych, I'm Jewish. You're like, what?
Oh, God, now that's horrifying.
Fuck you. All right, so you go to the Comedy Underground, and great club, you do these shows.
I know the story, Mark.
Yeah, okay, so. Well,
yeah, you tell it, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so I get to the, I'm scared of flying, it's something I need to work on. So I get to the Comedy Underground a day early, because I want to do the open mic night, and they don't have a hotel for me. Because it's Seafair in Seattle.
Yeah,
so all
which, if you don't know, that's a giant, like, the hydroplane races. It's on Lake Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, just all sorts of, food and booze, and people bring their boats to watch all these hydroplane races.
Right.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's beautiful, Seattle. Yeah. Everything's fine. The SeaTac Airport is the only available hotel, and that's until the next day.
Okay.
So, like, you can sleep in the green room of the club. The club is in the basement of a gigantic bar.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm right in the heart of Pioneer Square, which is next to the Mariner Stadium, the Seahawks Stadium.
Right next to the stadium, yeah.
Kind of a shady area.
A lot of homeless people outside.
Yeah, that's what I mean by that.
Very shady area. And then they're also like I believe in ghosts and all that kind of stuff. So like the club is haunted. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. So I'm there.
That's what the guy said?
Yeah. Okay. I'm a 34-year-old grown man and I have all the lights on.
So
and I'm trying to fall asleep before the open mic ends because I don't want to be there alone.
Because there are some couches in the green room. It's a spacious green room.
And they have these horrible, like, the comedy tragedy masks.
Yeah.
And they're at night, they're creepy. And they have these Mardi Gras faces. So I wake up at 3 in the morning, I feel a chill.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm so fucking freaked. Mm-hmm. I get my shoes on, I get my shirt on. I'm like...
Now you're ghost hunter Eric Myers.
I'm like, it's creepy downstairs. Have you been to the Comedy Underground?
Yeah, dude.
Imagine being there by yourself at 3 in the morning.
Well, no, I don't want to. Stop talking about that for me.
And I'm like, Eric, you're 34 years old. You're a goddamn grown man. There's no such thing as ghosts. And then I hear like the air conditioner going on. I'm like, Jesus, God! So I run upstairs.
What was the noise? What did it do that made you go?
You know the air conditioner goes on? It's like... You know how an air conditioner sounds when it goes on?
Not that. That's a ghost conditioner.
It's Eric!
This is not the air conditioner. This is the ghost of, you know,
that's fucking were, old man Hinkelstein, spirit of evil. Can I fucking?
That's when you were a little subject. And when he was like, this is not an air conditioner.
Yeah. All right, so.
I want to do 5 minutes tomorrow. You piece of shit.
Ghost of past open micers.
Ghost of past open micers. And I go upstairs, and I'm by myself. I have 40 days sober. Mm-hmm. And I go upstairs, and I'm in a bar. It's 3 in the morning, and there's just every booze, every beer, everything. God. And I could have I didn't see any cameras up there.
So there's the green room. This is
room's downstairs.
Right. So you went up to the bar.
Upstairs is a bar.
Still, yeah, that's right.
But the bar's empty. Yeah. I'm in the bar by myself.
So you had access to both levels. I didn't know that.
I had access to both levels.
Oh shit.
So it's like being in a bar of like Applebee's or Outback. Like I have access to an entire bar.
And if you are a boozer, this is heaven.
And I'm scared, which is a trigger.
Sure.
And I'm on the road, which is a trigger. And I'm an alcoholic, which is a trigger.
And you're by yourself, yeah, and no one's watching
like,
you.
And I'm 40 days sober, and I'm like, I was like, I have my phone, but I'm like, I can't call my sponsor. It's 4 a.m. And I looked at all the booze, and I was just like, and I know something taught me in AA. It's like, just you don't have to drink right now. I can drink in an hour. Like the beer's still going to be there. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, let me find something to do for an hour. And usually the craving goes away. So I ended up just falling asleep.
Oh, jeez. So you just buy yourself some time.
Yeah, you say I drink in an hour.
Yeah.
I'll drink at 5. I'm not going to drink now.
Wow.
So I find something to do till 5.
And that's like, usually how I am with some of these candles. I go, all right, I can buy a Skittles candle tomorrow. Don't buy 6 right now. It's a problem.
Was freaky.
Yeah. But then he goes to the checkout line, and then he sees like all the candies.
They put smaller ones with the film.
And those are his triggers. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay, so.
There are an alarming number of candles in here.
Alarming or maybe inviting? Maybe fucking figure out a different way to phrase that, Eric. Don't you? There's one thing. You can make
fun
of my family.
Is the electricity going to go off?
You can make fun of my family. You can make fun of my fucking couch.
I haven't seen this many candles since I saw the movie Dracula. What's going on?
Were there a lot of candles in that movie?
He was in a castle. There was no electricity.
All right. Jesus Christ. Expect me to know the fucking engineering layout of fucking Dracula's castle. Why don't you? All right. So then, by far your craziest, story to have to deal with post-sober, yeah?
Oh, that was my craziest story. Sober or drunk on the road?
Well, so I want to use that to segue into just and however much you want to embark on it. But just when...
I don't mind. You can ask me whatever about it.
What got you down that path? And because obviously you're great now and crushing it on all levels. And you've sober for how many days now?
17 months on the 23rd.
There you go, buddy.
Skippers.
Well done.
Longest I've ever had.
That's great, buddy.
Yeah.
But what sort of, I don't know what starts it for you?
At what age, did you discover? Because, I know kids who, got really bad into it, and Dare was the thing that introduced it, because it was such a, like, here's, weed makes cartoons funny and cookies even better. And they're like, fucking give it to me, I'm 9, So it's like.
What age did I discover I was an alcoholic?
Yeah, or just when did you get a taste and go, oh shit, this isn't going to stop?
I always kind of drank alcoholically. I didn't touch anything until I was about 18. But I believe alcoholism, in my case, is genetic, whereas when you just start drinking...
Sure is.
Yeah, I believe that. I'm not a doctor or whatever. But, the first time I drank, we were going to have a school assembly. My parents had this bottle of Captain Morgan. My parents never drank or did drugs. Mm-hmm. They're very nice people.
Yeah,
okay. And I had a really nice childhood. So I was never abused. I was never molested. I was never like, I had a nice life.
Maybe that's why you were looking to spice it up.
To spice it up.
Things are too great.
So you like go to mom and dad. This is your fault. You never molested me. If only you did, we could have prevented this entire thing.
Wow.
I'm not even going to touch that.
Yeah.
We had this bottle of Captain Morgan's, and like my parents never drank it. So it was like 80% full. They only like brought out when company was over or whatever. So I would always look at that bottle of Captain Morgan's, and I was always like fascinated by it, and I always had like all this anxiety and like self-consciousness. So one morning before school, I just took the Captain Brian's and I smelled it, or the Captain Morgan's, smelled it, and I mixed it with root beer and I started drinking it, and I started all the voices in my head, all the negative thoughts, all this constant anxiety just went away. And I was like, oh my God, I feel great.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, I want to feel like this all the time.
Yeah.
And then I ate these pineapple chunks. I started drinking more Captain Morgan's, put water in it, shaking it up so they couldn't tell anything was been taken out. And I go to school, and I throw up all over my desk. pineapple chunks everywhere. And the teacher comes up, he goes, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "I'm fine. I just shit all over my shirt." He's like, "You need to go to the nurse." And I walk down the hall, my friend goes, "Hey, Eric," and I go, "Blah!" And there's puke everywhere. And
wait. Let's just stop to acknowledge that friend. He goes, "Hey, Eric," and you immediately puke. So that kid immediately looks in the mirror and goes, "Fuck, maybe this is not the shirt or the fucking haircut that's going to get me further in life," because this kid just puked upon.
That kid killed himself that night.
Oh, no.
No, he didn't. He didn't. Right, I'm kidding. Here, can we hang out later?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So you go to the nurse.
I go to the nurse, and I was like, "I'm sick." And my dad took me home. He's like, "You smell like alcohol really bad." "Hey, no, I'm just sick. And I think he knew what was going on. And then I started smoking weed, because weed's easier to get in high school than booze. Mm-hmm. And with my friend Alex, we'd smoke weed, and if I couldn't get weed, we would find booze somewhere. And then I started drinking. Then I went to college. I started drinking like every day and smoking pot every day.
Yeah.
And I started
where it's encouraged and really acceptable.
Yeah, but right. I did it by myself. And I didn't do
still?
It. I didn't do it to fit in. It was isolation. Okay. It was just an escape. It was like an escape from reality. And it was just always like that.
And comedy was still, but you're still at this point like wanting to do comedy?
Always wanted to do comedy.
So did it hinder or like, I mean, you wouldn't perform fucked up, would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But still do well.
Well, the disease is kind of progressive. So when I first started drinking, 18, 19, 20, until about 25, I would just drink at night. And I'd be sick during the day. And then I discovered Xanax. And I knew when I woke up in the morning, the hangover, I would take the Xanax and feel better. And if I had a couple beers in the morning, then if I kept drinking, I always try to control
so you
it.
So had that cover.
Right. Oh, and then I would kind of binge drink where I'd have a little while, because I got a DUI.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got... And I got court ordered to go to AA, so I was introduced to AA at about 22.
Yeah.
And I had like a 30-day sober. And at the time when you're an alcoholic, no one wants to go to AA. No one wants to not party.
Right.
Because
life is still kind of good or something.
And I didn't. I was like, fuck AA, I don't want to be sober. I'm bored. I'm this and that. But I realized I was attaching pleasure to those things. I was attaching something fun to be but I was never having fun. It was just it was just abusing a substance. So,
and it was only by yourself. You didn't have any partners in crime.
I would drink with my friends, but after a while, it got so bad that people thought I was sober. So when I relapsed, I would be alone. Ooh. And I didn't want people to know. I didn't want people to see how fucked up I was.
So you were good at hiding that.
I was not good at hiding it.
Okay.
But I would have a little while sober, then I would binge for like a week. And then I would just fuck up my career. I'd be at like the Funny Bone and just get hammered, and they would fire me.
Yeah, I think you were telling me when we were on the train to San Diego.
All the time.
What you were on stage, and they what did you?
One time, I got arrested. One time in between shows.
In between shows,
I was at the Cincinnati Funny Bone.
Yeah,
and they wouldn't let me drink at the club. Everybody knew my rap, so I had a backpack full of beer and Xanax. So I'd go. Mm-hmm. I'd drink a little bit before the first show. I'm featuring for I forget Bobby Slayton.
Okay.
So I go up and do my 30 minutes. Bobby comes on, and I can't drink at the club. So I go, there's like a Barnes & Noble in the shopping center.
I know the
place. I go in the bathroom. Yep. I sit in the toilet in the stall, lock the door, start drinking and taking Xanax. And I pass out on the floor, and the cops arrest me. So by the time Bobby Slayton gets off stage, I'm being dragged out in handcuffs to the cop car. So everyone that just saw me on stage sees me getting arrested.
This is my closer.
Got fired the
next
day.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Literally, yeah.
And I fucked up my career really bad. But you know what? It's like it was what it was.
And that sort of stuff sadly had to happen in order for you to truly get help and finally realize those kind of things.
Yeah, I don't believe anything happened.
Wrong?
No, you're right. And I don't believe anything happens by accident.
Mm-hmm.
And, if I can help people. A lot of people call me, man, that want to get sober or have issues. And I feel very fortunate that people are calling me for help.
Yeah. Because you're a success story.
Thank you. 18 months ago, I was like sleeping in the bushes. I remember walking up to the Comedy Store with just a bathing suit, no shirt, no shoes, and asking to go on stage.
Right.
And
I'm really pissed I missed that night.
I had a bag full of beer that I had stolen from Rite Aid.
Wow.
And I was like, can I get a stage? And they're like, we can't let you in here, Eric. And I'm like, why are you doing this to me? And they go, you're doing this to you. And I was like, oh.
Well, like,
wow.
The amazing part is like, what? When I saw
Wait, say that real quick.
Wait, what?
No, my name's going to be on the wall.
Yeah. He's
a paid regular.
Let's not brush over that. That's fucking incredible.
I was banned there. They wouldn't let me in. No, they wouldn't ban me, but they were like, they banned me that. They didn't ban me. They're like, you have to leave right now.
And then you got your shit together and did what you got to do is and be around and go up and be not a piece of shit, be funny and nice. And then they, obviously, when you were cleaning in a great place to do what you do, then the store acknowledged it and... Yeah, your name's going to get on the wall.
Yeah, you became a paid regular this year, right?
Yeah, May 2nd was my first paid show.
And that and just so people understand, Comedy Store just went through a management change.
Yeah.
About when did that happen? Maybe like
6-7 months ago.
Yeah, like, and I'm pretty sure you were the only person since then that's been passed. Am I wrong?
Do you guys know
Candace Thompson?
Candace Thompson, Earl Skakel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but who are all three. Like, yeah. So three people.
Not very many.
In that time. Yeah. And that's not to say that people aren't trying. There's still a ton of people trying to be passed there, and you got passed. So the fact that you went from a place where you're walking up there in a bathing suit.
Yeah, by the way, they're not going to write your name on the wall. It's just going to be a picture of a bathing suit. I hope you're okay with that. They had us vote. I voted yes, so.
Yeah, just some shorts with a palm tree on it.
Can I tell you this?
Yeah.
You know Ricky Luna, who hangs out at the store?
No.
He's one of the door guys.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, Ricky. Okay.
Ricky, he'd always be out front of the store handing out, like, the tour buses come up during the day at the Comedy Store, and he'd
free
hand
tickets.
Out free tickets.
Yeah.
So I didn't have a cell phone, and I knew Ricky would always let me use his cell phone. You know, so I'm living with my friend, another comic, and I relapse. And he's like, "You can't stay here and drink." So I go, "Fuck you!" And I sleep in the bushes next to Trocadero on Sunset. There's that animal place,
Holy
and there's
shit.
These bushes, and I was sleeping in the bushes for like 5 days.
What the fuck?
Sleeping in the bushes for 5 days. I would steal beer from Rite Aid on Fairfax and Sunset. I would walk in, take a 30-pack, and walk out. No one ever stopped me. I'd do this 2 or 3 times a day and just sit in the bushes and drink beer. And I was fucked up. I lost my shoes. Lost my wallet, lost my ID.
Yeah.
And
you might have sold your shoes.
I might have sold my shoes for a crack or something. So I'm like, fuck this. I can't. I'm fucked up. So this was like 19 months ago. So I walk into the store and I'm like, Ricky. He's like, oh my God, what's wrong with you? I'm like, can I use your phone? I call my dad. I'm like, Dad, can you give me a bus ticket back to Florida? He's like, yeah, I will.
Fuck.
And I looked at all the names on the walls of the Comedy Store. And I grew up like idolizing this place, romanticizing this place. Sam Kinison, Pauly Shore. And I was like, I can't leave. If I leave, I'm not coming back. And I was like, I'm going to stay here. And my dad's like, okay. And I hung up the phone and left. And I drank for like 2 more days, then got my went to the hospital and got detoxed. And that was that.
Holy shit.
Is that crazy as shit?
So that was your moment where
you
knew that if the bus comes and picks you up,
I wasn't coming
back. The dream is dead.
My dream was always to move to Hollywood. And I moved to Florida to save up money, to stay with my friend Carmen for like, I'll be for 6 months. And I kept relapsing, kept fucking up. I think it was self-sabotaging or just a fear of success. And I was like, Eric, when are you moving to Hollywood? Soon. And I would save up $500 and go buy, insert name, a stupid fucking thing I don't need.
For sure you were scared.
Yeah, I was scared. And I got out of here and I was terrified. I get spots at the Laugh Factory, and there'd be Chris D'Elia, Whitney Cummings, famous people. I'm like, I'm not.
And you get on them, but you would do your thing, but you just couldn't see that because you were so just filled with fear.
My first show here was at the Parlor.
Yeah,
and I almost like had a heart attack.
Yeah, that's a scary place for those who have never been there.
Yeah, Parlor's not an easy crowd.
No.
Even for the most seasoned professional.
You were sleeping in bushes 19 months ago, and now your name is about to be painted on the most prestigious club like in the world.
It's fucking crazy, dude.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's so crazy. That's an actual true story.
And I'm so fucking happy for you.
Thanks, man.
For multiple reasons. I mean, just because you're this guy that the other comics would always we would always talk about on the road, like, God, Eric needs to stay sober. Eric needs to stay sober. All these comics root for you because we see what you're capable of. We see what you do on stage and the brilliant sets that you put together. And I don't say that half-heartedly. And we're just like, God, if he stays sober, this guy's going to be a fucking monster. And so now it's now you put the year together. Your name's going on the Comedy Store.
You got your special.
And that was your special Dopeless Romantic on Hulu, which people can check out.
Yeah.
And you were just on Showtime.
Yeah.
You just appeared on Andrew Dice Clay's show. And like now that you're putting together these months after months of sobriety, these amazing things are happening for you.
It's crazy.
And it's so good. We're all so happy because we're just like, fuck, yes, he's doing it. He's finally fucking doing it.
Because
he's
we also
living up to his potential.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I remember Brad gave me paid guest spots.
Yeah.
If people aren't comics, no one pays you to do a guest spot. I mean, and Brad paid me, I think, like feature money to do guest spots for him and Brea. And at the time, if Brad had said that now, I'd be like, dude, you don't have to do that. Like, I can't accept that. At the time, I was so poor. I was like, can you give me the check that night? Like, I was so poor, I had no pride.
Well, dude,
I was like, please give me money. I need
the rent for those bushes was not cheap.
Yeah.
It was
very expensive.
$25 a night?
This is West Hollywood bushes. Even the bushes cost money.
Good night, everybody.
The homeless guy next to me, like, I shit in Beverly Hills. I ain't shitting in these sidewalks like some vagabond. I shit out front of Pratt.
We also know, too, as comics, too, just how, like, much of a black hole people can get sucked into. And some don't make it out of it, man.
Yeah.
As we, you know, like,
and
so.
This town can be rough, dude.
Dude, it's fuck.
This town's an emotional clusterfuck. Here's $1 million in your dreams. Oh, never mind. We're not going to pick up your show.
Yeah,
what?
Dude, when people were like, hey, Justin Bieber bought a monkey and peed in a trash can, I'm like, oh, and he's 20, and that's the craziness? Dude, shouldn't we be applauding him that's as crazy
that's
as
like,
it's getting?
That's like all he's doing.
I mean,
oh, man.
Dude, if somebody videotaped me when I was 21, if somebody videotaped me now, people would be like, Eric is a fucking psychopath. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
But nobody wants, you know, if you're famous, it's like, what do you, these people are 22 and they're millionaires.
Yeah.
What the fuck do you think they're doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And the reason why, like, I paid you for the guest spots is A, I knew you needed the money, and B, I just wanted to keep you busy. And I wanted to keep you, like, doing shows because, I mean, idle hands are absolutely the devil's plaything. And I think you called me one time. It was like, Brad, I'm not getting spots. I need work. And I was like, well, fuck. Come out. Like, do shows.
Yeah.
You have to.
You're also so humble, too, man. And that, like, people don't realize how far that goes. Like, to not, because you know, I know you know how great you are, so, but you don't.
I don't feel that way.
Hey, and I'm not going to discourage you from, I mean, you should acknowledge it, but. Like,
some nights I'm like, I'm really funny. Some nights I look at my jokes,
good.
I'm like, what the
fuck? As long as you have, like, moments of that, because,
yeah.
like, it's going to always continue to keep driving you. If you get complacent and you're just like, I'm fucking always great, then you're not going to be driven or try to push yourself or get better than where you are now.
I don't feel great.
All right, well, that's maybe I'll give you a couple candles to take home with you. Because the Skittles candle.
I don't feel that bad.
How dare you?
I don't know. What time's the seance?
Shots fired.
We're bringing up ghosts of
fucking
Christmas
is like,
past.
You're being humble about it too. So we're like, you know, you're grateful and you're also as people say, like people want to work and be around people that aren't a piece of shit.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like I don't know, you know, if that comes from your, probably sounds like your parents are pretty good people and they've instilled that in you. As you,
my mom is like the best person.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
She's like just like zero ego. Like my mom is just like just the nicest person.
So it's got to be a part of you too that was like, I want to do right by them. Yeah, when you like were standing there in your fucking two piece and you were like, I'm assuming it was a two piece.
I want to be.
We never got specific about what the bathing suit was, but for my own sake,
it was. It was
Tori's
a C string
collection.
Yeah.
It was
a C string.
But I'm saying, like, you probably had a moment where you're like, I mean, right? Like, you're, if your parents are that, you're like, I don't, like, fuck, man. If they hear about me, if there's a picture of me in the bushes sent to them, like, what are they going to think?
Well, my dad would always bail me out whenever I got in trouble. My dad would, like, come rescue me. My parents drove to Iowa one time when I got thrown off a bus.
From,
I got thrown off a Greyhound bus from
Maine
Florida.
Or Florida. From Florida. Okay.
From Florida. I got thrown off a Greyhound bus for drinking Sparks energy alcohol drinks in the bathroom. My parents drove to Iowa. It was like 24 hours up and back.
Yeah.
My dad would always do shit for me my whole life. And when my mom was like, we're not going to talk to you anymore, I was like, oh, man. I felt like when you're homeless and you have nothing and you don't know anyone in this town, you feel like you don't exist.
Yeah.
And people treat you so. And I lived in a homeless shelter for like a month and a half. This place called Path. And it was like, I was like, I'd rather be dead than be here. And it was like awful. And it was like, that's a whole other story. But it was just fucked up, dude. But I put myself in that place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I put myself in that place. But that's where I had to go to get sober. You know?
Yeah, because how good does it feel when you've gotten yourself out of that place?
Dude, this morning I bought an iPhone 6 Plus with my debit card.
Yeah.
And I was like, the most money I've ever had in my life was $2,500. And that was from doing the Dice Clay show.
Nice.
And I spent that money in like a week because I bought a suit. And
good.
I bought this Tom Ford cologne that was like $8,000. It's made of like fucking
pterodactyl
piss.
Somebody should have talked you out of that.
Pterodactyl piss.
Because when you have low self-esteem, you're like, I'm going to have a fancy shirt and walk in the parlor and be cool. And that shit doesn't fucking
unicorn
work.
Unicorn fart cologne. Yeah.
You ever buy a new outfit and no one notices? You're like, this shit costs $8,000. These pants are made of fucking Gucci leather. Can someone fuck me? Or think I'm trying to be better than other people and everyone here is wearing nicer shit than me. And it was, but it's like, And it's not a superficial.
You're on top of your shit is what you're feeling right
it's
now.
It's not superficial, like, but it's like I'm becoming an adult.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I'm paying my bills.
Hey, man, it takes a little time.
We got a TV at our house. You know, I got food in my refrigerator. And that sounds really stupid. I never had shit like that.
No, it doesn't sound.
And you're a
stupid.
Comic. You know times are. You go sure. through times where you're like, you have oh, a yeah. bar, jar of peanut butter. And no. you're like, I might either die next week or get on. Yeah. Get on yeah.
Hopefully I can become a spokesman for peanut butter. Otherwise.
Yeah, you have a week. You're like, can I please do 5 minutes for free?
Dude, there's just certain things, there's certain little milestones that you hit where you're like, holy crap, I'm doing this now. Like
it's crazy,
this,
man.
This is kind of working now.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy that things are coming together for you.
I'm happy for you guys, dude. I see you guys fucking movies, fucking Showtime specials. It's like, I know these guys.
Well, and the thing that I want to stress to you is how much people are rooting for you.
Yeah.
How much the comic community, certainly anyone who sees your shows. I remember that one time when you opened for me, there was a group that came up to me that were also in the program.
Yeah.
And like they didn't know your story. So then when they saw you, they were fascinated by you. And like that.
Really?
And like the same way you tell me, like, people write you to be like, hey, I'm going through this. I need right. help. Like, you are becoming. Or you are becoming, and certainly have the opportunity to come, that voice for those people, and
yep.
that you are going to help so many people when they see that, when they see what's possible. This is so cool that this is happening for you right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I don't think I was supposed to say I was in. I have to say I'm in 12-step meetings. I can't say much specifically.
Sure.
The reason for that is because if I say I'm with a certain thing and then they see me fuck up and I'm any right. kind of level of fame, they're like, oh, that thing doesn't work, so it could affect other people.
Right.
So
right,
I don't
right.
know. But I think I don't know. So if I did say that and I broke a tradition, I do apologize.
but you know what, though? Like, we're all still here for you, and you're doing great. And from my other friends who are in the program, I know that you're never done. Like,
no.
There's never a point where you're like, I'm good.
Yeah, no.
yeah, that never happens. So
no.
it's constantly working on
yourself.
Is there
a routine that you have to kind of like keep things in check?
I have a routine I do every day. And if I don't do it, I'm like batshit crazy.
And now is it superficial if you say it? Like, well.
Because alcoholism, the disease of alcoholism, it's not about the drinking or the drugs are a symptom. And mm-hmm. then, like, you still have the ism in your brain. You see me and how I am. That's how I, like, I have to meditate just to be in public and not make an ass of myself and talk to be like not horribly socially awkward. I have to meditate, do yoga, go to my meeting and be like, okay, just go out and have fun and talk to people. Everyone likes you. No one's, you know what I mean? Like, just for me to interact and be normal in society takes work because I don't have the alcohol. So just for me right. to like go up to you and be like, hey, Adam, how are you?
Yeah, you have to.
And you're
meditate.
Like, hey, what's up, man? I'm like, is Adam mad at me? Like, my brain is crazy. It's crazy.
Well, from here on out, know that if I'm mad, it's because you didn't wear a bathing suit.
I have my routine. I go to the gym.
Yeah.
I do Qigong, which is kind of like Tai Chi. I do yoga. I pray. I have a vision board. Then I go to my meeting from 1 to 2, and then I eat lunch. I write jokes for half an hour, and then I take a nap, and then I go out and do shows.
Sounds like a fucking
And that's what I've been doing
routine.
For 17 months. I don't break it. If I don't do my meditation in the morning or go to my meeting or do my pray or do my little vision board, I'm
meditation. I keep Kevin Nealon preached hard on this podcast
it's the best
about
thing
that.
Ever, dude.
Sklar Brothers just
fuck
about it.
It's really it's one of the hardest things to do is to quiet down your mind, but there's no wrong way to meditate. And even doing it for 5 minutes, there's a lot of guided meditations on YouTube. There's even like a chakra one that's 10 minutes.
And you get to make up your own mantra, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can have pictures. I have a vision. You know what? I read a lot of self-help books, and it's like, you know, most people don't get where they want in life because they don't know what they want. So it's like, write down your goals. So I have like, I'll Google image pictures of shit that I want, and I'll put it on the vision board and be like, what are the top 5 things that I want? It's kind of surprising. You're like, oh, I want that. And a lot of stuff really happens. I promise you.
You will it, yeah?
You kind of will it into your existence. I know that sounds kind of weird, but
no.
Life's fucking weird.
Dude,
but
whatever works.
The fact that we're sitting here and life's crazy. And if you're trying to make sense, if you're trying to tell me what's going on out there, no one fucking knows.
Yeah, but like the same way we talked earlier about how can someone get mad at you for doing the voice if it's causing people to laugh, how can anyone get mad at your routines or stuff that you believe in or things that or things that you practice if it's allowing you to be successful in your sobriety?
Right.
I just don't see how anyone could be like, vision board. Like, it's like, no, fucker, it's working.
Well, if it works for you, and that's what's, yes. It's so similar. I mean, stand up in life hand in hand like this, where it's like you figure out your style for stand up for what works for you and like how you prep for a show and, right. and your process for writing. But it's like for life, this is what works for you to set up, to be in a position to do your best. So right. it's like, I mean, I don't know how much you do. People, I mean, does your family know you meditate? Do people know that you, or do you kind of just go, "Oh, look, this is what I do, and this is what works for me," and I'm gonna.
Everybody knows, and it's like I'm very fascinated by the mind, the mentality of really successful people, and I see people like you and Brad who are just like always doing stuff. You know what I mean? Social media shows. It's like. People see people become famous, and they're like, oh, he was an overnight success. No one's an overnight success.
That's where the compare game, I feel like, is,
no
beneficial, is beneficial, where you look at your peers and do kind of like, you know, compare as far as like being like, should I ask yourself, like, am I doing enough?
Right.
You know, but when you're straight up looking like, he got that, why did I get that? It's like, well, you're two completely different, and like you're on different paths.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But to use people as like a gauge of like, oh, shit, like, I feel like we're in the same boat of like sure. what's possible, you know, so it's like to...
all these people in my industry do this and do this well, so maybe that works. Maybe I should try that, whatever that
Have you had any sort of like mentor, anybody who you've looked up to that you've become friends with now out here that has kind of like given you a piece of advice you've been on a show with or had any sort of like enlightening moment like that?
Oh, yeah. I watch what people do. I watch what certain comics do. The thing I really liked when I watched Chris D'Elia is that he was having so much fun up there. Laughing and it looked as if the crowd wasn't laughing at all, he didn't give a fuck because he was having such a good time.
Right. Yeah.
And I started trying to get in that headspace of like, just go up there and have a good time. If I'm worried about somebody laughing at something, it's not going to happen. And I also watched Gerard Carmichael, and I watch him just be so comfortable. And he's a genius and he kills, but sometimes he'll say a new joke and it'll be silent.
Yeah.
And he's the silence. It's fascinating watching. Here's the thing that I think is so fascinating about him is public speaking is the number one fear in the world. Mm-hmm. And to see somebody go up and say a joke and no one laugh, which is most people's worst nightmare,
right.
and have him be totally unfazed by it,
it's mind-boggling.
I'm looking at him to see any... I'm like, there are no beads of sweat.
Right.
He just said something... Like, if I told you a joke, we were by ourselves, and I said you a joke and you didn't laugh at all, I'd be embarrassed. I'm like, oh my God. Right?
Right.
Now, imagine if there's...
You take your dick out just to compensate.
I'd have to take my penis out and stuff it in his mouth and hope for any kind of reaction. Wait. I'm already ashamed. I might as well, you know, have an orgasm. I'm already embarrassed.
Sure.
Right? But, yeah, man, so I like to watch people that aren't just don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Because
being fearless on stage is definitely an acquired skill. I mean, right? It just takes to get that comfortable where you can completely just not give a fuck.
Yeah, like I even saw you at the Wood, which is a really scary crowd for me.
That's in San Diego?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, good.
And Adam crushed, and it's like they're so drunk and rowdy, but you just like, you did awesome, but I mean, they were hanging, but it's like, if somebody talks,
a lion for sure.
But that one guy was fucking. He said something to you like, "I'm a lesbian," or something.
Right?
Do you remember that guy in the audience?
Something about being friends with lesbians. Yeah, something.
He said something, and Adam. I mean, every like a lesser comic would have had the guy overtake him, but Adam just like kept making fun of him so bad. But you did it in a way where you weren't like.
I used him to kind of like.
It was fun.
Create him. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You weren't trying to make him look stupid.
Yeah, no.
You weren't taking jabs at him where he was like, fuck you.
But you definitely get your, you know, and that's where countless times of having to tame the beast as a crowd in general to where you're also like, you get your, you get personally challenged where you're like, I can't, the audience wants to feel like they can trust you're in control. And
right.
the moment you're not, it's just, so I think countless times of not being in control and trying to figure it out to where like now where things like that happen where I'm just like, okay, now I know that I'm going to, like come out on top here. I just have to like, you know, figure out how. But also that guy was so fucked up. It was like,
he was an asshole, but you just kept like, you kept calling back to it and it was so fucking hilarious. And it was just like, it just made the show even better.
Well, I mean, much like sobriety, like comedy, you're never done.
You're never done.
You have so much more to learn. You have so much more to do, and you could always learn something new and learn a new skill and watch someone else and be like, oh my God, how did he or she do that? That's so cool.
And we should comment, by the way, that we've been drinking around you this entire time.
That too. We are insensitive fucks.
As much as we're sitting here being like, how do you do it? It's so great that you're fighting it. And I'm just fucking pouring glass of wine.
That's not.
I thought that was apple juice.
It is.
And they smell the glass. Brad is hammered. Brad's just smoking crack for the last hour.
Brad's two beer Brad.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Brad's actually shooting heroin into his arm.
Fuck you and your unicorn.
Brad is two beer Brad. I don't know what crack would actually do to that guy.
Oh my God, I might grow.
I remember Brad like a year and a half ago. Do you remember that picture you had of you in Vegas in the ER? Did you eat a pot brownie?
Yeah. That was on my birthday.
Weren't you dehydrated?
Yeah.
Oh, well, Jesus.
Yeah. That's when Instagram.
I was like, Brad's dead?
Yeah.
I was so upset. I was so scared. Well, I was like, Brad.
No text from any family member or person he was with. I just see him post. Maybe somebody else posted it.
Yeah, well, someone else posted it because I was incapacitated.
Dude, imagine.
My brother-in-law posted it.
Seeing
Kevin.
Your friend on his account, him passed out like white in the face against the wall in Vegas. And then I think he just said, like, on the way to the hospital, and I'm like, whoa, man, like, no hashtag he's okay or something. Yeah, like, yeah. Some sort of, like,
no. Yeah, so when I say in my special, fuck you, Kevin, yeah, that's who that was. Yeah. So thanks, Kevin, for scaring the crap out of people I care about.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that was fun.
Well, this has been one of the most fun podcasts we've had in a while.
Absolutely.
Oh, we were recording? Jesus Christ, I didn't even...
And start being funny now. Take a dick out.
So I says to the dog.
Oh, God.
You can't sit on the rug for free.
And that's how we end.
That's how we end. I don't even know what I just said.
So, that's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.